bold and raw perspectives of local politics. Important information which impacts our community, nation, and world. Exposing truth, transparency, and getting to the heart of relevant issues that you just won't see in the clickbait media. And always keeping it real. It's the Michelle Tanner Podcast.
But I won't back down.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Two episodes this week, so super exciting. I have actually sitting with me here in studio Frank Mylar, who is running to be Utah's next Attorney General. So, Frank, thanks for making the journey down, and welcome to the podcast.
Absolutely. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we've been trying to, like, make the pieces fit together for a while to get in touch. I'm a state delegate myself, and I'm sure there's probably going to be some state delegates watching this. So I would love to just first learn more about you, because to be honest, I don't know a lot about you and your background, and I've heard you're very qualified for this race. So please tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. One of the things that qualifies me maybe the most is I've been married for 36 years to my wife, Debbie, and we've had five kids, and they've all graduated from college. So it's awesome. Kind of a good time to actually run for Attorney General. I don't have a lot of little kids around that I'm trying to juggle soccer games with anymore, basketball games. And then we also have five grandchildren. And so that's just a huge important part of our lives. We've actually lived here, my wife and I, our entire marriage, our marriage career. and we've loved it here. We were not from here. We were both from liberal areas. I was from Seattle, and my wife was from Boston.
Oh, interesting. How did you end up in Utah, of all places?
Well, very excellent question. I went to Seattle University Law School. I went to high school in Seattle. Then I went to a very conservative Christian college, Wheaton College in Illinois. And by the way, it's also similar to BYU. It actually has a pledge that both students and professors and everyone actually sign that they agree to. And this is actually such a conservative place, one of the most conservative cities in the country. And they, when I went there, they actually had no alcohol sales and no sexually oriented businesses at all in the entire 40,000 population place. So it was a very excellent place to go to. When I Seattle was a very liberal place, and I recognized even in high school that this place is just as liberal as San Francisco.
Yeah,
it just didn't have the reputation yet. Mm-hmm. And now we know a little bit more about
now.
It. So it's not. Yeah. And so when I was in law school, my wife's fraternal twin actually went to the same church I went to. And that's how I connected with Debbie. And we got along well. We had both run marathons. And she was at that time living here. She was in a master's program at the U, and she was also director of physical therapy at the University Hospital.
Oh, wow.
And so, so we connected. We had a long distance relationship. And after I graduated from law school, we just basically said, hey, why don't I just move here until you're done with your master's, and we'll move somewhere else. And we just fell in love with it. The pro-family attitude, such a radical difference from Massachusetts and Seattle.
Oh, yes.
And we fell in love with it, and have been here ever since and raised all of our children here.
So have you seen a shift in Utah from the Utah you moved to 36 years ago to the Utah today?
Yeah, there's some interesting things. I honestly will say this. I think that there's a certain element that feels like this is still good conservative Utah, and they don't realize that's fading. That thinking is fading, and I think there's some well-meaning people have kind of a hear no evil, see no evil Pollyanna attitude about politics and about politicians. And it's harming us more and more as more liberal people move in, like people from California and things like that. And we really need to kind of wake up and realize, wait a minute, you know, not everything is just perfect in paradise here.
Yeah, well, and I think especially the first part of, at least that's what I've noticed, is at least the people who are approaching me from, who are moving here recently as refugees, essentially from California and some of these liberal places, they're saying, whoa, 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 you guys don't know what's coming, because they can see already some of the way the leadership in this state is taking us,
yes,
is heading us right down to be the same place, essentially, what they just moved from.
Yeah.
And it's this frog in the boiling pot effect for a lot of us who have been here long term, who, like you mentioned, are just you know, oh, all is well in Zion. Nothing to see here. Everything's just great. So what do you feel like you could do as the Attorney General to help maintain some of those values that make Utah such an amazing place?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I've actually been in the trenches fighting for rights and so on. Oftentimes, Gail Ruzicka or Eagle Forum people call me and say, can you come down to the legislature and testify on a bill? It should be a good AG testifying on these bills. They're never to be found.
Yeah.
And in fact, one time when I was, when an attorney general was called, it was Mark Shurtleff, and he was trying to push through some hate crimes legislation that would have some pretty bad effects. And the House GOP, joint GOP Senate both the House and the Senate GOP caucus invited me to debate Mark Shurtleff, who was the attorney general who I had ran against before. And they ended up going with my understanding of what the effects of that bill was. And so in a lot of ways, an AG should weigh in more, especially on these morally minded issue bills,
right,
you know, either to oppose them or to promote them as they need be. And the AGs, last several of them are nowhere to be found in weighing in on these important issues. So what I would be doing is just doing what I'm already doing, but actually people are going to listen a lot more. Although I feel like they listen to me a lot more. In fact, at one point, Mike Lee, when he was Governor Huntsman's legal counsel, he says, you have no idea how much impact you have when you say something to these legislators. And that was several years ago when Huntsman was governor. But it actually surprised me. I didn't realize that. But an AG, as an attorney general, I'm going to have a lot more impact on raising a number of issues that are important to us, whether it's women's sports, girls' bathrooms, COVID issues, all of these issues. The AG's office should be taking a stand on and doing something about. But often they've been pretty quiet.
I'm so glad you mentioned COVID, because that for me was the big wake-up call of the importance of getting involved in local politics, because overnight we saw how quickly people will give away their freedoms under the guise of safety.
Yep.
And if we don't have people willing to stand up and say, no, this violates the Constitution. So I want to know from a legal aspect, I mean, I came at it from the medical standpoint as a nurse practitioner, and it was mind blowing. I would have a patient reach out whose allergist told them they shouldn't get the, you know what, the arm. And, you know, because of these immense allergies and known anaphylaxis, but yet the allergist refused to write them an exemption because they were too scared of what might happen to them if they wrote an exemption. So, you know, they came to me and I wrote them an exemption because, you know what, you do the right thing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, from a legal standpoint, were you doing anything during that time?
Yeah. And there's a lot of that really is a troublesome issue to me, because the AG was missing in action. The other three candidates were missing in action. They didn't do anything about it. But actually, people called me regarding their freedoms. And incidentally, it was Justice Alito from the Supreme Court who was touring the country at that time. And saying that he's never seen such a retraction of our civil liberties in his entire lifetime in this country.
Amen.
And so the people would call me and say, hey, can our church meet? And I said, yes, or a private school or a Christian school. And I said, absolutely, you can, for two reasons. One, there's a religious freedom clause.
Yes.
And a religious expression. And also because you're not a place of public accommodation. And so for these laws that apply to these businesses don't apply to a private entity. Mm. And even from a, you know, if you want to look at a science perspective, you get roughly the same people going to church and school every week, every day, right? You get a hodgepodge going to Home Depot. It's going to be way, if there's really a concern about a virus spreading, the Home Depots are the ones you should lock down, you know, not churches and schools, especially when they have further rights. And so that was one thing that I just gave free legal advice. The next thing is I'm associated with Alliance Defending Freedom. This morning, Alliance Defending Freedom helped Idaho, the state of Idaho, defend their pro-life laws in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. 3 weeks ago, they argued against the abortion pill. They are the cutting edge institution in this country that's fighting the ACLU on all grounds. And I'm what's called an honor guard attorney with them, because I've spent hundreds and hundreds of hours helping vindicate people's constitutional rights without charging them a dime.
Wow.
And so when they called me up, because they know I'm a constitutional attorney, who's fought religious liberty issues, and they said, Frank, can you help people get religious exemptions? And I said, absolutely. You know, I didn't bat an eye. I'm going to help. And so I did start doing that, and I helped people in different places like Indiana and all over, and then obviously some people in Utah. And one of the persons I was able to help was my daughter, who's a nurse at Primary Children's. And I was really glad to see that they gave the least pushback of anyone that I worked with, and I was really happy to hear that. There's just a lot of people wanting those religious exemptions. Most of them were being denied if they didn't have an attorney helping them. And by God's grace, everyone that I helped get an exemption got it.
That's great. So. It bothered me so badly, though, that it was even to that point that we had to get a religious exemption because, you know, myself being employed in the emergency department at the time, who had already had the natural infection pretty recently to when the mandate came out, was breastfeeding a baby, which breastfeeding women were excluded from clinical trials. So there was zero data to show that it was actually safe.
Right.
But yet I'm being mandated. And if I decide to actually follow science and follow my conscience, then I have to somehow decide that it's against my religious belief or come up with a medical reason. It was just... To me, that felt like a violation of constitutional rights because we should have the freedom to choose what goes into our bodies.
Exactly.
So that was really frustrating. But I'm grateful that there's good people like you out there who were willing to help people during that time because it was a time where there wasn't a lot of professionals who were willing to help people out and just do the right thing.
Well, and let me tell you that that was the first wave. Right. This is going to come back again. And we know it's going to come back sooner or later. And we know the Democrats love this issue for some bizarre reason. And we need an attorney general who cares about people's rights.
Absolutely.
So one of the things I will do is give a direction to Department of Professional Licensing and saying you cannot take action on somebody who's giving their reasoned medical opinions of why they should or should not have a vaccination. Period.
Thank you.
You know, I
that
mean, they huge. Should be shielded. Not unlike we've done in Utah for abortions. You know, we've allowed some rules to go into effect sometimes that protects people in residency. If they do not believe they should do an abortion, they don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Some states are different than that. The military used to be that way. It's probably been changed with Biden, but they could also, operate on conscience and say, I don't want to do an abortion. It should be the same thing with vaccinations, but there is a huge medical element though, as you've pointed out. There's people with problems with blood clotting, heart issues, and there was a lot of very reputable doctors that said, I'm a cardiologist, you do not get this vaccine. And they shouldn't feel like they have to cower. Their free speech rights are harmed and potentially their profession is harmed if someone takes action against them because they said something against the vaccine.
Absolutely,
I mean, really, this is horrific. This is like 1984, the book 1984.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Brave New World by Huxley. And it's like, wait a minute, what are we doing here? And there was very, very little questioning of it. No one was giving guidance in the state in terms of an official at any top level as to what you do have to do or what you don't have to do. And what I love about... COVID is we actually had a dry run of this. We had Florida on one side, on the right. We had on the left, California, New York.
Right.
And they were COVID crazy. People went bankrupt. Businesses couldn't go. All those problems. They wore them in schools like 2 years afterwards. I think it was last year when California actually dropped some of the mask mandates in schools.
And many of those kids are so psychologically messed up now that they're still wearing them because they're afraid of what people might think the way they look, or it's a way to hide, or they're afraid of germs. It's beyond disturbing what they did to these kids in this country.
Yeah. And what you saw was the incidence of COVID was no more in Florida than in New York or California. And it should have been worse because there's the retirement population.
Right.
There's a higher age group. And, you know, and I'm fine if someone wants to get this vaccine. It's their choice. I'm not going to tell them they can't get it.
Right.
But we should not have vaccination passports. We shouldn't have requirements of a job that you have to get a vaccine. Whatever happened to HIPAA? Where is that when you need it, right?
Right.
You're not supposed to ask these questions of people, and yet suddenly HIPAA was out the window, no confidentiality regarding your medical opinions mm-hmm. and what your medical professionals would say. You know, people like you, what you would, you know, in terms of giving opinions on right. treatment, those never should be aired out in the public.
Right.
As to, you know, there shouldn't be a question about whether or not so-and-so can have this job because you've had the vaccine.
Right. And to be threatened, as you mentioned, as a medical professional for, say, prescribing something off-label that's yes. been used for dozens of years and is a Nobel Prize-winning yeah. medication that we know is safe to use yep. essentially in everyone. But yet, for the first time in history, you're demonized as a medical professional if you're prescribing a medication off-label.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That, to me, was just...
Well,
evidence of
it's oh, well,
the
let's,
disaster.
Let's, but
we
let's
were
be clear about it. It was only off. You're only demonized if it was off-label related to COVID.
Right, exactly.
Because, as
exactly.
you know, as a practitioner, I'm sure that doctors and providers have been providing things off-label for decades.
All the time.
And it's and they know that it's working, and it's sufficient for them to base that. Based upon experience of their professional experience to be able to prescribe off-label applications.
Correct. Yeah. Wow. It would have been nice to have a bulldog attorney general who actually values our constitutional yeah. rights during that time. So shifting gears a little bit.
Good.
I want to talk about this recent lawsuit that I believe was settled in Texas over a drag show. Mm-hmm. Was that at Texas A&M?
It was Texas A&M, and actually I don't know if it was ultimately settled or not. I do know that the plaintiffs who wanted the drag show and it was canceled by Texas A&M, that it was upheld by the Fifth Circuit that they could cancel that drag show. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court and they refused to take it. So that doesn't always mean, hey, we agree with it, but it doesn't not mean that either. I mean, there's actually some, you could take that either way, you know, that maybe the Supreme Court does agree with them and they're not taking it. Or they're just very busy with other important cases and they're not taking it.
Interesting.
But the bottom line is that's the law of the land there in the Fifth Circuit. And so, yeah, this is something that was just a few weeks ago that they denied.
What was the basis for their denial? Do you know?
No. Because okay. it was most, and I've had a number of cases. I've been licensed before the U.S. Supreme Court since 1993 when I had a prisoner writ of habeas corpus that was filed. And so I know that there's been numerous petitions that I've been involved in at the U.S. Supreme Court. And most of them, they just say deny. And once in a while, I got an opinion from Justice Thomas saying you guys are being irresponsible not taking this case. But mm-hmm. most of the time, people just get a straight deny and that they don't
from
get
the Supreme
anything.
Court. Mm-hmm. What about in terms of the actual drag show that was to take place at Texas A&M? Because then Texas A&M denied the permit. Is
correct.
That correct?
Yeah.
Do you know what their legal argument was in terms of their basis for denying that permit?
I don't know all of that, but I will say there's certain things that are general issues that are applicable. One, are there going to be young children? Two, is it going to be some things that are obscene? Because actually there's obscene things in a lot of these shows. And is it going to be disturbing? Is there going to be some issue that you need to protect minors from? Anytime there's a parade, that's an issue and that's a question. And of course, this is a public university, so sometimes they're scrutinized a little more. Private universities have a little bit more leeway to cancel those kinds of events than a public university. So that's why it was important. But I'm sorry, I don't know all the
specific
particulars.
Oh, no, that's okay. I just
that.
Was curious because this is a topic that comes up a lot, especially in regard to protecting children, mm-hmm. is where do you draw the line between protecting First Amendment protected constitutional rights mm-hmm. versus protection of children? Because some will argue that it's my right to go out there and strip in the street, yeah. regardless of if there's kids around, because that's my constitutionally protected right to freedom of expression and free speech. And then, of course, you look at many of the laws of the land that are designed to protect children, mm-hmm. whether that be car seat laws, whether that be tattoo age limits, whether that
tobacco.
Be driver's licenses yeah. and alcohol, tobacco yeah. age requirements. I mean, every way around you look at it, we mm-hmm. are constantly making legislation to protect children.
Correct.
So where is that line?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the line is that children are in a different category. And children means anyone under the age of 18. And so those have been traditionally protected. And protecting children from harmful materials, that's generally, there's criminal laws on that in just about every state, I think. It is every state, I'm pretty certain of that. And so there already is society realizing, hey, there's things where you don't want to cross a certain line, and certainly sexual issues and nudity are at the forefront of those things that we want to protect children from.
Right. So what other things do you feel like is driving you, compelling you to become the attorney general?
Sure.
What would you like to address?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I want people to go to adflegal.org. And because that's, I said I'm an honor guard attorney with them, and I want them to study that organization. And that, you get a little picture of who I am, because I fight these kinds of cases. I've been fighting them over the years, the decades, and that's something my competitors have never done. They've never really fought for constitutional rights by filing a lawsuit and filing it as an attorney would. I helped sidewalk counselors who were in front of an abortion clinic. They were criminally prosecuted by Salt Lake.
Wow.
And I defended them. It went to trial, and we won. And I didn't charge them a dime. And by the way, so actually I'm the only candidate in this race that has criminal prosecution and criminal defense experience.
How are you making any money? You do a lot of free pro bono work, it sounds like.
People have asked me that. And by God's grace, he has elevated me to be considered one of the top law enforcement defense attorneys in the state.
Wow.
And in fact, people from other states call me not infrequently asking for help. I lecture at least once a year at the Sheriff's Association conference here in St. George and at the Dixie Convention Center. And I also sometimes teach at the prosecuting council meetings. And so these are things that I do. But the benefit of that is I don't get paid more per hour defending sheriffs, but I always know I'm going to get paid. And that's huge if you have your own law practice like I do.
Right.
And so I did defend the Highway Patrol Memorial Crosses as a private attorney, and I did not charge the association a dime. I also I've defended numerous citizens in many organizations in front of school boards asserting their rights against schools who are trying to deprive the parents and or the students of those rights. Sometimes it's just actually a letter. A recent one was the one at Copper Hills where they're trying to squelch the rights of a conservative club on campus of the students. Mm. And all it took was a letter from Alliance Defending Freedom. They CC'd, copied me on it because I'm the local counsel. So if they have to file a lawsuit, I'd be filing that lawsuit here in Utah. And I've done that many times. I've fought to protect marriage. I fought with the Hobby Lobby case years ago. I fought to protect religious therapists in California to be able to give therapy to minors who are concerned about their sexual confusion. That's actually prohibited in California now.
Wait. In California, they are or are not allowed?
They are not allowed to, and they could go after your license. That same bill was brought to Utah. And that was another one where Gail Rizika called me up and said, Frank, you got to come down and you got to fight this bill. And I said, absolutely. This is just like this California case that I had that we need to fight.
Yeah.
And,
why would they not be allowed to provide counseling?
Sure.
I don't understand
what
that.
What the homosexual and sexual confused groups hate the worst is the truth that you don't always have to be that way. They hate that with a passion. And if you, as a therapist, and usually it's a religious therapist, and usually a Christian therapist, that's going to say, no, you are not born this way. You are meaningful in God's eyes. You are born either male or female. God's word says so. And let's work on how you can get out of this. And these are situations where the child and the parent want the help. In California, as a licensed therapist before the state, you are prohibited from doing that. All you can do is encourage the deviation. You cannot do anything that would look like you're discouraging where they're this bent that they're going. And especially with the whole sexual confusion issue, you know, people are wanting hormones and surgeries. The facts show that a lot of kids have a lot of, you know, odd ideas, you know, let's be honest, they're teenagers.
Yep.
There's a lot of things going on. There's hormonal things going on. They can go like back and forth like a wave, you know, in terms of how they think one day versus the next day. And, you know, and to think that they're going to, just because they're saying right now in this pinpoint of their life, oh, I think I'm this, and that's going to forever stick. The statistics say that it doesn't. And so we're actually doing a disservice by allowing any hormonal changes or surgeries prior to them being an adult. In your adult, like I said, you can get a vaccine if you want. You can do a lot of things if you want. Although I don't think you should. I think that's a question on whether a doctor should ever give a surgery that's just simply not warranted by medical practice. But it's a different realm when you're not a minor.
Right. Yeah. Get all the elective surgery you want as an adult, right?
Right.
But yeah, it's a different story as a child that, as you mentioned, 80% plus statistically of those children will actually change their mind as an adult.
Sorry, I get back to the subject. So fighting to protect women's sports and women's bathrooms is a huge passion to me. And I was going to file a lawsuit with ADF against the university here in Utah and when COVID hit and it knocked out all the women's sports in college. And so, but they've been filing, ADF's been filing these suits like to represent the girls' high school track team, not the track athletes that would have gotten the silver and gold, but a man beat them, a boy beat
them. Wow.
And this is just horrendous. I mean, you've got the author of Harry Potter and you've got Richard Dawkins, the seminal evolutionist, are agreeing with us on these weird issues.
It's like, even Bill Maher is agreeing with us on
these issues. So, I mean, there's really a certain amount of insanity that we're delving into going down this track. And I'm going to hold the line. I'm going to say, no, there should be zero exceptions. We need to protect these girls in schools. And we need to start thinking about the girls' rights and not just this one person who wants to change it for them. You know, the girls have privacy rights and religious freedom rights. They, from a religious perspective, a lot of these girls, especially in Utah, would never want a boy in their bathroom or in their shower room, period. They don't care if they have T blockers. They're a boy. They should not be in there. And they should not feel that that terrible feeling that they have to feel having a boy when they're trying to undress or go to the restroom.
Absolutely. Yeah. And with the diversity, equity, and inclusion, and speaking of constitutionally protected rights, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see anywhere that allows a certain class to have special privileges and special rights above another simply because of the color of their skin or their sexual orientation or their gender.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're allowing to have happen with these DEI policies, with ESG. Recently at the legislature, they did pass a bill to address DEI in at least our education system. But yet I'm still seeing, just the other day, someone sent me a special graduation that our local university here is holding, but you only get to attend. It's only for people of a certain sexual orientation are allowed. So how does that jive?
There needs to be leadership instead of cowardice in the Attorney General's office.
Yes.
And when we don't see them or hear about them on these important issues, that's cowardice. They don't want to weigh in because they're worried about reelection. I don't care about reelection. I care more about doing the right thing. As opposed to the other candidates, they've never been in the positions that I'm in fighting for people's rights. That is what I care about. That is my passion. And the state attorney general has ability to say to this university or to this school or to this school district or to the superintendent, you cannot be violating the rights. You cannot be violating state law. This is state law. You have to do this. And once I enter that and give that opinion, then that's a red flag to them. They're going to get sued. They better change their behavior. And I actually have the ability as the attorney general to enter into a private lawsuit where they're suing a school or a university because I've done that before as assistant AG, where I've entered into a private lawsuit to assert constitutional rights. When I was in the attorney general's office, I was in the AG's office for about 12 years. And so I actually know you can do that because I've done it, as opposed to everyone I'm running against. They've never done it. They probably don't even know you can do that. So as the AG, I can actually weigh in on these lawsuits, even if it's a private lawsuit, potentially.
Interesting. Yeah. And I like that you mentioned, I mean, we don't need any more cowards, because I see this happen in all different entities across the state, where instead of just doing the right thing and getting the porn out of the schools or not allowing, you know, sexual behaviors in front of children and on and on and on, these entities will say, well, we're just too afraid of the ACLU and, you know, we might get sued. But I feel like if we had a strong attorney general, right, who would have the backs of, like, I just had the sheriff on a week or so ago talking about some of the ways their hands are tied with illegal immigration and the rules that are being put on them by the federal government of, well, you have to treat someone who's illegal differently and give them special lotions and give them a separate entrance into the jail. But yet, I feel like if we had a strong attorney general, could you do something about that to say,
absolutely,
hey, sheriffs, I'll have your backs. Just do the right thing and get the criminals off the streets.
Absolutely.
Right?
And in fact, I've actually successfully defended the Washington County Sheriff on numerous occasions, and I've never lost, actually, in doing so.
Oh, that's
but
great.
I will say this, that I'm also the only candidate that's ever fought the ACLU. It's not a big deal to me. I know that schools and I know these different places are really afraid of them. Well, guess what? They don't need to be. The Alliance Defending Freedom was started to fight back against the ACLU
in
1994 with ex-Reagan administration Justice Department officials and very, very skilled attorneys. And that's what they're doing with a passion. And so I already have the ability to fight the ACLU when we need to fight them. And I also fought the ACLU when I was in the Attorney General's office with the Department of Corrections. Their National Prison Project was trying to sue a class action lawsuit, one of the biggest cases in the state at that time, and I handled it. I was the attorney for, they had about 12 attorneys on the other side, and we won, you know. And so the thing is that they need to push back. The prisons need to push back against ICE as well as the jails. They need to say, no, if you want us to house your prisoners and you want to pay us to house your prisoners, then you're going to do it our way. We're not going to have special surgeries and things like they want to get the State Department of Corrections to do right now. I don't know if you know that. Department of Justice gave an opinion saying there needs to be these preferences for in terms of surgery and treatment with respect to sexually confused prisoners. And you know what they're doing in California? They're letting the prisoner decide whether they're a male or female. And then they can go. They can say, "I'm a female." What male prisoner wouldn't want to be
exactly
in the female facility? It is crazy. But they actually have that right in California now. We need to tell ICE and tell the feds, no, these are Utah prisons. We have our own standards. We're not going to do this nonsense.
Right.
But they need help, because it's hard for one county like Washington County to say, I'm going to fight these feds all by myself.
Right.
But if it's led by the attorney general and all the counties are behind it, the state prisons behind it, it's a different situation. And what I would do, because I've done this before, I would bring in other states and say, you need to help us in this fight. To put the feds back in their place, because this is just another area of federal encroachment.
Absolutely.
You know, we do talk about the lands, and we should, because it's a huge problem in Utah. But there's lots of encroachment with the Department of Justice in the Davis County School District. Again, now with the state prisons and now with ICE.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely something that we need to push back on and say, no, you don't tell us how to run our jails or our prisons. We tell you what we do. You take it or leave it. Take your inmates to Colorado or California, because there's federal prisons there.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Such an important issue. And also, shifting gears a little bit, election integrity is a very important issue across the country. But I hear it a lot in this state that people are concerned that there's not enough transparency in our elections, that people don't trust the machines.
Yep.
Unfortunately, our current administration, with the LG being over elections, has not done a good job at being transparent when issues have arose. Instead of addressing the issues, instead, they've spent our tax dollars to put up billboards and tell us how safe and secure our elections are and just to trust them.
Yeah.
And there have been lawsuits. There was one last year during the special election when Celeste Malloy won the special election for Congress, and it was discovered that actually she wasn't a registered voter, which is a requirement, not a registered Republican. There was a private lawsuit filed, which eventually they did lose the injunction to get her off the ballot, but there just wasn't the funding to continue on in that lawsuit. So as the attorney general, can you address some of these things and concerns with election integrity?
Absolutely. First of all, it's unfortunate. Those people never called me, and I think House Bill 54 also when they tried to disenfranchise the state delegates by having a way you can buy signatures. Mm-hmm. No one actually talked to me about that either, but people do talk to me about a lot of things, and I fight. And by God's grace, I've mostly win almost every time. And it matters who the attorney is that's actually fighting these things. And so it matters that I am the only one that's actually prosecuted crimes. I had my first fraud trial within 2 years out of graduating from law school in the attorney general's office. Wow. So none of these other candidates, they've never prosecuted anything, let alone fraud. So that's something that we need to look at is election fraud. I agree. There's a breakdown if a significant amount of the electorate doesn't trust the system. And what I asked for, I was one of the first candidates in this race. I was the first candidate, I believe, in the AG race, but maybe one of the first candidates of all the races to request paper ballots at the state convention. Why? Caucus was a disaster. And if that was such
a
disaster.
That's right. You got up in our last state convention, didn't you? Were you the one who got up?
I didn't. No, I wasn't there then.
I thought that was you for some reason. Because there was someone who got up and had the paper ballots all ready to go. And we voted on it. But unfortunately, it was narrowly voted against. And we ended up using electronic.
So you take these a step at a time. You know, that's one issue. The other issue that I have a serious concern with is the mail-in ballots. we should not be focused on convenience. And drop boxes and all this nonsense, we should actually be more careful about whether we've actually verified this person. 20 years ago, I needed an absentee ballot. I was going to be gone for whatever reason, and I had to go down and show my license and my voter ID. They looked at them, gave me the ballot. From then on, I keep getting them in the mail. I never show my license and ID. I sometimes go down in person and vote. I don't always, you know, send in that. But this is a danger for every one of these ballots that gets mailed out, because ballot harvesting has been a thing for years. President Johnson, one of his campaign workers, was prosecuted in Dallas for ballot harvesting.
Wow.
So this is not new.
It's not a new thing.
No. And in terms of we got to not be so enamored with technology that we just rush in. There's not the security that you should have with these things. And the ability to audit is huge. Can you do an immediate recount? You know, you need to be able to count every vote that was cast and make sure there was no way to have changed it.
Right,
right now, I was at the Charlie Kirk thing last night, and he said that he knows that same program that we're using at the state convention where people were just trying to refresh and it was counting it as multiple votes.
Wow.
And so now I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's interesting that he was familiar with the exact process we're going to use at the state convention. And so this is something that we need to restore trust, because trust is lacking. And for a government official like the lieutenant governor to say, oh, everything's just, you know,
safe and secure.
Yeah,
trust us.
That's
those who don't trust us are causing a threat to democracy.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. You know, and interestingly, it was okay for, Hillary Clinton to say the election was stolen from her in 2016, but it wasn't okay for Trump to say it was stolen from him. But in any event, the big thing is this, is that there's a lack of trust, and we need to restore it, and we need to go back to paper until we can verify that this technology is working and fair, and there isn't a possibility for fraud. Right now, we don't have that. We don't have those guarantees.
Right. And what's your opinion on the cast vote record? Because there was another lawsuit, mm-hmm. you know, with the LG's office, with their unwillingness to produce cast vote records, where, you know, a lot of other states, that's public information, but yet somehow in Utah, we have a massive percentage of protected voters in general.
Yes.
And then the cast vote records is not public. Even me as a canvasser of this mm-hmm. last election, it was like I was trying to do something really shady and illegal to ask, okay, if I'm supposed to certify this election, can I see the cast vote record?
Exactly.
It was like pulling teeth, like I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. And I think that as Attorney General, I have access to those. Now, I don't know this answer yet, but I think that means I could also release those. So I think that I would have the ability, it's oversight. Now, I can tell the lieutenant governor what she needs to do. She can actually ignore me, right? Because she's actually in charge of elections. That's the way it's set up. And that's why there's been some question about maybe we need a separately elected secretary of state.
Yes, we
because
do.
The lieutenant governor in Utah is joined at the hip with the governor. And that does not promote trust.
Right.
And so maybe we do need a Secretary of State and not have this joined at the hip person who's going to just parrot everything that the governor wants them to parrot. And so, yeah, so these are huge concerns. We need to bring back a sense of confidence. And until we can verify the technology, we need to go back to paper.
Absolutely. I appreciate that perspective. Yeah. We're down to just about a minute left.
Oh,
so
wow.
I will leave you with, closing remarks.
Sure.
And where can people, you know, find
Absolutely.
You and follow your campaign?
Absolutely. So we're really gaining steam. We've got a lot of people. The GOP veterans have endorsed me. American Moms have endorsed me. A number of sheriffs and county attorneys, Chris Allred from Weber County Attorneys endorsed me. There's a lot of support that I'm gaining out there. And I think it's because they're realizing I have far more experience than anyone else that's running. And I'm the only one with criminal justice experience, period. I'm the only one that's actually fought for people's constitutional rights, whether it's pro-life, religious freedom, gun rights, fighting the feds. I just filed a Supreme Court brief 3 weeks ago fighting the feds in eastern Utah. Everyone else talks about these issues, the other candidates. It's all theoretical. And so we're just having to trust their theory. So go to frankmeiler4ag.com, and I love your support at the state convention. Thank
you. Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Frank. Appreciate it. Thanks for watching. See you guys next time.
Thanks for being a part of the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Please like, follow, subscribe, and share. And always remember to keep exposing truth.
But I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
This has been a production from a podcast studio.